Hello, this is the Torg Eternity Delphi Council Debriefings, where the storm has a name. I am Lehman for the pre-intro. We recorded a little bit more than what I wanted, but I think all the information we have here is good. So I'm splitting up into part one and part two. We're going to be talking about acts and scenes. So today we'll get to part one, and next week we will get to part two. And I hope you enjoy either watching and or listening. Thank you. Hello, this is the Torg Eternity Delphi Council Debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Jay, and Mark. And today we will be talking both for Game Master and players on the adventure structure that Torg Eternity uses, which is a little bit different than other role-playing games out there. Adventures are based on act and scene structures, so we want to help the Game Masters be able to make their own adventures and help the players when choosing when to use resources, what they might need to think about on keeping or expending during an adventure. So we'll get into that. We did not have any emails, but we do encourage you to email us at torgdcd@gmail.com, and you can send us questions or comments. We will answer your questions and comment back on your comments. So Torg Eternity is, like I said, a little bit different than other role-playing games. Other role-playing games, you just usually do things until the scenery changes and you keep track of minutes, hours, days as needed. Some games are a lot more time-sensitive than others, but there actually is a loose structure of adventure in Torg. So the base structure is an act. An act is kind of a small plot, or the beginning, middle, or end of a plot, and it's usually broken up into scenes. I want to say the smallest act I've seen has probably been two scenes. Normally, our Delphi missions are around three scenes, and when you go into the mega adventures like we talked about in Fires of Ra, you get anywhere between four and six scenes. And depending on the how many scenes your act has, that gives both some benefits and some hindrances to your player characters, the Storm Knight. So we want to bring in some of that stuff. Jay, did you have any thoughts overall, when we're just talking overall structure, what a game master might want to take into account on how it differs than other RPGs out there?
I guess the main way that it differs is it's a bit more mechanically involved. There are other games that use these things. The Storyteller System and Chronicles of Darkness, for example, have things broken into scenes and chapters, mm-hmm. and chronicles, as opposed to scenes, acts, and adventures or whatever. But they do have some mechanical effects, mainly gaining willpower back if memory serves, but not nearly as much as Torg does. So Torg, the scenes affect when you get cards back, and acts affect when you get possibilities and experience and cosmic cards. Hmm. So those are all pretty big influences on it. So it can sometimes, it depends on you as a GM. It could sometimes feel like it's a good scaffolding for you to build your adventure around, and it can be really helpful. Sometimes it can feel limiting. And I think one of the things we're going to kind of go through today is probably knowing how and when to change things when it's suitable for your campaign. But they also act as nice little hard stops for the players to remind them, okay, now it's time for you to do something and maybe rethink your cards and things like that.
Mark, do you have any overall things for game masters in the structure of acts and scenes?
Yeah, the Torg is unique in a lot of ways. The cards aren't the only thing that make Torg different from other role-playing games, though. That's one of the very big differences is the card play that the players get to use and that the GM uses as well. Acts and scenes, while as Jay said, other games use that those are also kind of distinctive for Torg, and it's I like to juxtapose that from the way that a lot of other role-playing games will do locational entries, like this is location number one, location number two, location number three, and it's not to disagree with Jay too much, but the I disagree with the idea that it's more mechanical. I think it's less mechanical in an acts and scenes, in that it's more free form from the standpoint of acts and scenes lends itself to storytelling versus locational details. And it's to me the locational detail thing's very, very mechanical, in the idea that when you come here, this is what you find. And then the players get to determine what happens when they go there, if they want to interact with the bartender, or they want to ignore the bartender, or they want to talk to these people, or they don't want to talk to these people, versus in the acts and scenes kind of setting, it's a flow that you've got a story that's being told from one place to another, and you've got these locations that are fleshed out loosely in the idea that this is the element of the tale that's going on at this place, and here are the key players or the key assets for this location or the scene or what's going on here. But when you get to there are things that like a river kind of move you along. And I think Rod would call it railroady. And it can be if it's poorly executed, but to my sense, it's more of a, like Jay said, this is a container for resource replenishment, and the resources that you've enacted will last for this amount of time, and it's either an act or it's either a scene or whatever, and it's going on for the entire duration, which is one of the things GMs have to kind of keep in mind is the resources and what they're tied to, like Jay said, or like Liam and you said, possibilities are tied to acts versus some abilities are tied to scenes.
Yeah,
Versus others tied to rounds.
I think Jay meant on the more mechanic is because at the end of scenes, it's kind of this happens, boom, 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 cards.
Sure.
There's a certain structure of, okay, play kind of pauses or storytelling kind of pauses. Let's work with the Destiny card mechanic. And then when an act ends, it's a, okay, the game pauses. And there's even a place in the book that says this is a good time at the end of an act to kind of pause the game, let people get drinks and refill, use
Sure.
the bathroom stuff,
Or go home.
or go
Or go
home,
home.
give them their XP, your possibilities reset, etc. So that's kind of the mechanical thing that usually doesn't happen, because it can happen in the middle of the game. If you're playing a long game and you're going to get through a couple of
Oh,
acts,
yeah.
you might, okay, lunchtime while we do this type of thing. And then the scene structure also deals with the cards. So I think if I didn't misunderstand, that's what Jay was going
Yeah,
on.
that's what I was talking about,
Okay,
but
I
the
took that a
want to
little differently,
interrupt.
so my bad.
Yeah, so
But it and like
and,
you
but
said,
then
the XP.
once that's done and the new thing starts, then there's a lot more just flow that is just what happens might happen, and it's kind of in this relatively same place and time, and it is relative because the place could be an entire city, it could be a house, it could be a street block or something, but it's not something completely shifting. If it's something completely shifting, then you get a usually shift into another scene. So as the game core rules state in page 257, acts and scenes are the skeletal structure of Torg Eternity adventuring, giving it form and bearing some of the logistical weight. So that's the weight of all the resources. And then basically each act is built around a specific purpose within the plot, kind of on a broad thing, and then the scenes get you to that plot. And so let's go down to the very lowest level of published structure, which is the scene structure. So when you're talking about a scene, and I use the classic Torg term because as the relative same place and time, that's what I've always thought about it for the last 30-something years that I've been playing Torg. If it gets out, if it's too far of time or too far in distance or things change, then the scene should change. But if it's kind of the same thing getting done around the same area, then that all could be in the same scene. And there's two types of scenes. There's standard and dramatic. The standard scenes, once you get into rounds and flipping the drama deck, those are kind of leaning towards the Storm Knight's favor and should be easier, although sometimes the dice fall poorly for the Storm Knights and it gets a little difficult. And then the opposite on dramatic scenes. The dramatic scenes are favored a little more towards the threat side, the villains side of things, and your Storm Knights are probably going to have to use more resources and realize that things are not going to go as easy as they normally do on a general level. Again, you're with exploding dice, especially both on the player side and on the threat side, there's always a chance that things can flip-flop, but that's kind of how they are set up. So, Jay, if you're talking to a new game master and you were like, here's how I would tell a new game master to kind of think about setting up a scene, how would you do that?
Okay, so a scene is kind of like a single story beat that's happening. The act is an overall broad stroke of some overall thing. The way you would think of it generally is an act is an episode of a TV show, and then a scene is in between commercial breaks. So you've, unless you've got HBO or whatever. So a scene is something happens, right? Like something needs to happen, and that ends the scene. And it's not necessarily just wandering off, you know, because like in D&D or some other games which are site-based, like Mark was talking about, you know, they have a big old map and you could just leave and now that's kind of useless, right? Whereas the scene, if you engage with it, that's what drives it forward. It might change if they completely vacate the area. But the thing to be aware of is, there's actually just so much to say about this. It's hard to know where to start. So the thing is, there's very different running scenes and creating scenes for your home game versus what you see in published modules. Because a lot of what you see in published modules is almost the opposite of what you should do for your home game. Because you want to keep things vague in your home game. You have an overall concept for the act. You know, this demon lord has taken over this city and you need to get him out of there is the overall adventure. And then each scene is kind of, you know, part of that. So, okay, first we need to sneak you into the city. Then you need to, and possibly meet up with the resistance. And then you need, for the next scene, you need to infiltrate his lair or something like that, or find some way of sabotaging it. And then the next scene is like getting away, and there'll be other thing like riots in the streets, things like that. And then maybe a final confrontation. And you just have sort of like a vague idea. And then that lets the players control things. I also like having multiple optional scenes. I know Lehman mentioned it at the beginning. If they do, like, there's the possibility I have prepared this, this, and this. They might only do one of them, and that is fine. They might do none of them. You don't need to use everything that you've written. And the thing to remember is if you write a scene and they don't do it, you could just save that for later or somewhere else. You know, you just change the names, you know, and then you could still use
Protect
it.
Protect the innocent.
But yeah, that's sort of the big thing. Now, because there's mechanical impact on it, you also don't want scenes to be too short or too long. I think one of the big eye-openers for me was the day one Living Land adventure. And there's one scene where you're going through the city and there's actually like multiple encounters in that one scene. And you don't get to refresh your hand until the end of the scene. So the players actually have to go through multiple combats. And I have seen other adventures, especially Delphi missions later on, where each scene is just like one fight. And I think that tends to make things way easier on the Storm Knights because they're able to regenerate themselves between every single fight. It is the equivalent of just being able to have a long rest after every fight, right? So know what you're doing as far as pacing goes. The longer you have between scenes, the less likely the players are to be able to refill.
Right.
There's plenty more to talk about, including whether briefings should count as a scene, things like that, but I've rambled enough, so.
No, that's fine. Before I switch over to Mark, just to clarify what we're talking about for scene and card for the Destiny cards, is at the end of a fight, and you can look back, you can look at whatever episode we talked about how the drama deck works for encounters, but each encounter that requires rounds to be done, a player will take their cards in their hands and they will put a card into the pool, and they can only play the cards that are in the pool. And then at the end of a fight, or whatever was happening that required those cards to be flipped and the cards to be put into the pool, the players then take those cards back into their hand. A lot of the time, this happens at the end of the scene, or very close to the end of the scene. You do whatever little investigation type thing you have. You get ambushed or attacked by the church police. You beat them off, and then you get to a point where, okay, now it's time to move to the next scene. And then there is what is called replenishment, which is players pick up all their cards like they would, but then if they have less than four cards, then they draw cards up to four cards. And if they have four or more cards after that, everybody, if they want to, they can discard a card and pick one up. And if you have more than four cards, you drop down. But if you have like five cards and you get to the end of a fight, you pick those all back up, and then the scene doesn't end, you still have those five cards. They don't get dropped down to four. But if you've only had three cards, you still only have three cards. And as Jay said, if you build your scene with bunches of little fights, then at the end of each of those fights, people are probably going to get less and less cards, to where when they get to the end, especially if you have like five or six, they might not have any cards unless they've been looking at every single approved action coming up and, you know, succeeding in getting the card from the approved action. So I just wanted to clarify that's how the replenishment works, and that's why the scene structure, as Jay said, can be very important depending on if you have a short scene that you don't have a fight and you haven't expended any cards, and then you can look at your cards at the end, you can trade one of the bad cards away and refill with a good card, and then you're really set up for the next scene. Yeah. Because those cards carry over into the next scene. At the act, you kind of start fresh, but the more scenes you have in an act, and the shorter the scenes are, the better prepared, the better resources that the Storm Knights are going to have as it goes on. If they are lots of encounters and fights within a scene, then that's going to kind of bring things down by the time they get to the end of the act. They might have used all their resources. So now, sorry, Mark.
I was gonna circle back to the Destiny cycling later, but that is one of the ways you can kind of tell the more experienced groups, too, is they know how to do that.
Right. So I was going to switch over to Mark for your thoughts on that scene structure for a game master, how they might be able to make the Goldilocks scene, the not too short and the not too long.
Yeah. So Jay has there are in fiction writing, there are two general approaches to how writers approach setting up their fiction. One's called pantsing, and Riding by the Seat of Your Pants, and the other one's called Plotting. Jay has kind of outlined the pantsing version of it, where you just keep it loose and you're loose and fast, and you don't tell the players what you've set up and what you've created and what you've written and detailed. You just let them go, and when they say they're going over here to the bar, your job as the GM is to make it indistinguishable what you wrote versus what you're making up on the fly, and your players should never know the difference between the two. But that gives them the flexibility of going anywhere they want, and they can see the game and the world, and it feels genuine, and you don't shatter the verisimilitude when they go there, because you're like, well, I don't know what's in the bar. I haven't written that. It's the wrong answer. The right answer is Bob is the bartender. Never mind, Bob was also the
have
guy
a list of NPC names
or a name generator or something. Just,
yeah.
That's one approach. That's not the approach that I tend to use, because I can do it. And I enjoy doing that, because as a game master, anybody who's game mastered for more than one table will, or even just one table, will discover the fact that no matter how much you write, the players are always going to go somewhere where you didn't have something prepared, mm-hmm. and you got to make it up on the fly. And as I said, your job as the game master is that the players never know what you're making up versus what you've already written. For me, I like to treat the acts and the scene set up in Torg as kind of like writing an outline before you write something. And the acts are the big Roman numerals, and the scenes are the capital letters beneath. And so when you set your Roman numeral or your act, this is the main thing the act is about. Then every scene underneath that act has to support what the act is about. And then when you get into the scene itself, you have one thing that scene is about that supports the point of your act. And when you finish all of the scenes in that act, you have the dramatic scene doesn't have to be at the end. Typically it happens that way, but you should switch it around so that people don't get, oh, we're only in the second scene, so this isn't going to be a dramatic scene, so I need to, you know, hold my resources because we got the big scene coming up, and all of a sudden, boom, we're in the dramatic scene and you didn't know it. Whatever, that's fine. But the scene structure needs to have one point of focus that supports whatever your act is about. And you can have some – this is not a term that's in the game. It's just kind of the thing I use. But there are – inside your scene are events that you have – I would say 1 to 3 events tops in your scene. And an event being a major named NPC that you need to interact with to get the MacGuffin, the widget, piece of information, whatever it is, a card flipping event, which means the players go into rounds, be it a combat, a chase, a DSR, something along those lines, or one other thing that is kind of a detailed event that's, you know, I don't know, you know, you the denouement or something that wraps the whole scene up that has, it's typically you got 1 or 2 things in a scene that support that point about your act. The problem with having too much stuff in a scene is everything in Torg is about resource management, both from GM standpoint and the player standpoint. And if you pack too much stuff in a scene, it's going to feel way too busy, and it's going to break that verisimilitude for the players, where it doesn't feel organic or correct or right or whatever, and it doesn't flow right. It's very jerky, and it yanks them out of the world that you're building for them. And then they die because you've sucked too many resources out of them for them to be able to manage whatever your dramatic piece is. And the dramatic piece is, as Lehman said, tends to favor the bad guy. And so your threat is going to be in the dramatic scene. You need to be prepared as a GM. You need to be prepared for your threat to be stronger because the dramatic cards lend themselves to helping the bad guys. I mean, it's kind of like Nile Empire obstacle piling, but all the time, no matter where you go in Torg, because that's just how dramatic scenes work for the bad guys. So you have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, how much stuff am I going to ask my players to do before they get to this big fight? And if you've sucked all their possibilities out of them before the big bad guy shows up, one or more of them are going to die because they don't have anything to soak with. I mean, you're counting on them having the wherewithal to remember to keep a hero or a drama card, and then pooling it in order to soak with it. So scenes, really, the scene structure to me really is that one, two, or three events inside the scene that must support what that scene is about, which, as Liam had said, same time, same place, same location, same people right there. And just like you're watching TV or you're watching a movie, if it decides that it's got a – something happens where you would expect, oh, this is a good time for a commercial, or, okay, now they're going to go from here to over here, or something happens that it's different in some way, boom, that's the end of your scene. And make it logical and make it progress. And if you're – if you find yourself with 8, 9, 10 scenes in an act, you need to stop and try and figure out how to break that one act into two. Because typically, in my opinion, an act needs to be no less than 3 scenes and no more than 7. Typically, 5 is a really, really good number to shoot for, in my opinion.
Yeah, like I said, I prefer the 3 to 5. The 7s tend to get a bit really
yes.
out of place.
You're dangerous when you get beyond 5. So
I will... I like Jay saying it's kind of a beat. It's the scene is kind of a beat of the act, that the act is the point, the goal, and then each scene should be a stepping stone to that goal. I also, Mark, I like that three things happening. And not always, but I always look at it as one is movement, one is information, and one is a encounter, be that a fight or an action, you know, a DSR, a fight, or something like that. Movement, and these are very loose terms, you know, movement could be going into the Godnet or Kerr. It could be getting to a place. The little
Jay's
travel
infiltration of the guy's base.
Right. You know, the getting close or getting out, it might be. Maybe you start them that they've, you know, they were traveling, you know, last scene they were determined that they needed to find information at this bar. You start the next scene, they're already at the bar, at the entrance of the bar. Going into the bar, to me, isn't necessarily the movement of it. That is just the prep to get the information or whatever is needed in the bar, but maybe then you need to flee the bar, and that's going to be your movement, or get, you know, out. So there's some type of movement. There's information, and that could be finding information, interrogating, questioning, or just talking with a contact. But that information is something that then will progress you to know where to go next, or the choice of where to go next. There's been a few of the published mega adventures that you learn enough that you're like, oh, we got to get 5 MacGuffins. And so we got to determine which of these 5 MacGuffins we're going to go to, you know, next. So there might be a decision, but there is information found, a understanding of what the next stepping stone is. And then, Mark, as you said, there's usually a chase, a DSR, something that gets those cards flipping. Every once in a while, I like to do a little twist and throw an extra encounter in there. So maybe moving to the place, that movement, they're having an encounter during that. Maybe, like we talked about in Fires of Ra, you start off the scene and you're in a dogfight. So you're moving towards you need to go, but you're also having a fight or an encounter. Or in especially Living Land, but just the Torg cliche of your plane, something happens and you're trying to prevent a crash.
It's going
to
go down.
So yep. Start off with a DSR or something like that that occurs during the movement, then you the information, and then a fight. And it doesn't always have to be that. You can take those three things and, you know, make them different. You can have the fight, have the information, have the movement, the fight, and then the information. There's just a lot of possibilities, but I kind of think of those broad strokes on how to get to a scene. And when I also say relative time and place, that place could be extremely long. A lot of times when you switch to a scene, you don't worry about the travel from one scene to another, but sometimes the scene is travel. If your important neat little thing's going to happen on the road, like in Tharkold, where there's vast distances in Russia between cities, and you have your scene, the scene is the road. You're traveling down it. That is the relative place and time when you're dealing with scavengers on junker, you know, cars, Mad Max style type thing. That can be a scene, even though it could take place during your travel, when that's where a travel becomes a scene. But again, each one of these builds on each of these is a beat to get to the overall act. So let's kind of we I think talk pretty decently on Game Master.
Can I say one thing about that? So Game Masters and scenes understand that if you're calling for a dice roll, that means resources. Mm-hmm. So if you the game favors the player, and so if the player wants to know, well, what level of success do I need? Success should always equal success. So if you're asking them for a die roll in DC 10 or DN 10, and they make a 10, they've succeeded, so they should get whatever piece of information is vital for them to move on. Good and outstanding should give them additional stuff, but you should never tie what they need to move on to a good or an outstanding level of success, because succeeding should be success.
Yeah, especially in the published adventures and stuff like that, when you're not when you're at a point, if I don't find this out, we can't advance the adventure, then you're going to be playing another game.
Then they should be given that info. That should be given to them.
That should be given. If the only counterpoint I will have to that is if you have a long-term campaign that is not time-based, and your players can learn that information on another side quest, and then they can go, oh, that's what happened. As an example, a group of mine, they find a magical portal, and they can't decipher the runes to know the passphrase to get into it. Well, that plot has stopped, but they're doing other things, and if they ever come back there, they can do it, but that's because this is a campaign that's been going on for, you know, 3 years. Now, if this was a seven-act campaign, a seven-act adventure, then they would definitely need to know that. Otherwise, we stop the adventure and they can't go through the portal, and we're playing a different game the next session. So that's that's my only caveat, is you do have to think, is this a long-term campaign where anything can go over lots of time, or is it a set time?